Hey, this is Jeff from the FASD Success Show. Have you ever wanted to share your story and experience with the world? Let others in on your lessons and hope they find comfort knowing they aren't alone in the journey?
It's exactly what my guest, Jelana Goebel, has done.
For a second time with her new book, A Love-Stretched Life, Stories Unwrangling Hope, Embracing the Unexpected, and Discovering the Meaning of Family. In this episode, Jelana reflects on her journey to fostering and what she's learned along the way, including the difference between how children are presented in the foster system versus the reality of how their shifting expectations allowed them to thrive, survive, and grow as a family. This girl is real, she gets it, and her stories are fantastic. We talk about that and a lot more coming up next. Let's get after it.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flippin' mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Oh, yes, yes, y'all. Welcome to the FASD Success Show. If this is your first episode or your 111th episode, thank you so much for being here. Dudes, I know it's hard. You got lots to do. So the fact that you spend an hour and a bit with me every week, I love it. So if you're new here, welcome. My name is Jeff. I'm the host. This show is all about creating success. It's all about creating FASD success in the community at large. So whether you're an individual on the spectrum, you're a caregiver on the spectrum, you're someone in somebody's life who's on the spectrum, this is where you go to get the most up-to-date, awesome info about FASD. And how do we do that? We do that by talking to people who are really doing some amazing things in the community, from doctors and lawyers to parents to individuals on the spectrum themselves, to today where we are talking to foster parent and author Jelana Goebel. She is excellent, very well spoken, and I'm excited about her book. So we're going to get to that in just a few seconds here. I hope that everybody's having a great week so far. I hope you're listening to this at the beginning of the week. And then if you're not having a good week, the rest of your week is excellent. And if you had a shitty weekend, let me propel you into the excellence that is either this week or the rest of the week. So this is what's going down, man. If you like what we're doing here, if you like what's going on at FASD Success, by all means, please give us a subscribe. Tell your friends. Tell everybody you know, because we're looking to be the go-to podcast when it comes to FASD Success. And we are, if we're not already there, we're well on our way. And that just means we get to reach more people. And subscribing to the show definitely helps us do that, because it tells the algorithms in the background that we are relevant. People are looking for us. And we're awesome. So you do that, and it also helps you, because as soon as we drop a brand new episode, bing, bang, boom, right into your room. By room, I mean smartphone, tablet, however you get your podcasts, we just get there right away. So it is a mutually beneficial, symbiotic relationship. Cool? Also, if you haven't yet, and you're feeling kind of down and alone, and you want to be with other people who get it, and you want to ask questions from other caregivers who have been in the trenches, and not from some people who might have just read a book or not understand FASD at all, you can go to our closed Facebook group, facebook.com/group/FASD forever. Got 4,200 folks or some out in there. We try to keep it as safe as possible because our community is excellent. We have excellent moderators. So go there or be square. Okay, so today we're talking to Jelana Goebel. She's awesome. So who is Jelana? Jelana is a speaker, an author, and advocate. She holds a master's degree in teaching. Together with her husband, Luke, she parents 5 children in an age range from preteen to young adult. Jelana is the founder of an unprecedented initiative that has turned into a statewide movement called Every Child Organ. See, it's not Oregon. It's Organ. Says so the people that live there. In 2019, she published No Sugarcoating, a book with practical suggestions and insight for prospective foster parents. She's passionate about getting the community at large to link arms with the state's overburdened child welfare system to uplift vulnerable children in the foster care and those who serve them. She's been through it. She totally gets it. She's a great conversation. Her book is fantastic. You're fantastic. So let's listen to what she has to say. Because near the end, too, I ask her, hey, you know,
people who listen to this, I bet you they've got a book inside them too. How did you do it? How did you do it? How did you write a book? Have you ever thought about writing a book? Have you ever thought about doing it, putting what you've lived through? Well, I'm just going to give you a little bit of insight. Okay, having said that, I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's go. All right, here we go, folks. Here I am with Jelana Goebel. Did I get the last name right?
You got it. You got it all right, Jeff.
Only way is because it's close to mine. That's it. If not, I am known as the butcher of names. My friend, thank you so much for joining me today. I just really appreciate it.
I am so thrilled to be able to talk to you today.
Yeah, well, that's cool. You know, people sometimes they say, I am excited to talk to you, but then like, let's just leave it at that, because if you spent like a week with me, your opinion would 1000% change. So we'll just keep myself in a good light. Cool, buddy. So just before we got started, it's a big week for you. Your book drops next week. It's called Love Stretched Life. I'm not sure. This isn't your first book.
It's not. I wrote a book in 2019 called No Sugar Coating, which is a perspective. It's a book for prospective foster parents, kind of like, hey, when I look back to 20 years ago, when I began my foster parenting journey, like these are the pithy nuggets that I wish somebody had just sat down and just straight talked to me. So that came out in 2019. A Love Stretched Life, which releases next week, is really kind of the story behind the story. It's how I've been shaped through being in proximity to those different from me.
Yes, ma'am. And it changes you for both sides. And I'm sure you could agree, you become a better person because of it. And it teaches you things and pushes you in ways you never thought you'd be pushed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I imagine a lot of your listeners can relate to this. Like if I had a future glimpse, like if I could look into a crystal ball and see what some of my days were going to look like in the hardest moments, you know, I might've been tempted to say something cheesy like, well, you know, some people are cut out for this, but I'm just not one of them. Or like the things that people now say to me that I'm like, what? You just keep on walking what is put in front of you. And so I honestly consider it an act of grace in a lot of ways that I didn't know, because I would have counted myself out and would have said, I don't have what it takes. But yet, here I am.
It brings me back as a former foster parent myself. Do you know, like, and I didn't really realize from the time I said yes, because I was working with this young man before they asked me to foster him. Like it was literally a week for a home study. And now that I look back, that's not right. I wouldn't have given me a foster kid. Like I was in my late 20s. Are you nuts? Yeah. Especially that everything goes on with it. But the need for placement is so real. I don't think it was disingenuous from the placing agency. They're just so overwhelmed, overburdened, and they have to find placements. It's like a carousel.
Well, it is. And it's like the most depressing math equation in most communities that just doesn't add up. Like too many kids needing a safe, hopefully temporary place to be, and too few families. And so I think it does kind of continue to overwhelm families, and they feel like they feel more obligated to say yes. Maybe they say yes to a child that is going to burn them out or might not be the best fit for the child. I mean, it's so easy to see, like you said, Jeff, like that carousel that's created when there's scarcity of resource parents and too many children.
1000%. Now we're going to get into that, but what is it like now a week before the book comes out? Are you just a bundle of nerves, or because this, you've already done this once before, you kind of know what it's like? Is it anticipation? Is it like, what is going, how's your nervous system right now?
You know what? My nervous system is good. I feel like I have a lot of practice with this nervous system of mine.
Yeah.
Living underneath the roof of my home. So I feel like it's one of the inverted gifts, right? Is like not sweating the small stuff. And I feel like it is what it is at this point. Honestly, I'm excited. I signed this contract, Jeff, to write A Love Stretched Life back when we all thought the pandemic was going to be like maybe a 2, maybe 3 week thing.
Yeah, I said July. July.
Yeah. I had no idea. I have 5 children that call me mom, 4 that are under the roof of my home right now, ranging in age from 10 to 18. And I had no idea that for the better part of 18 months, I would have 4 children not going to school underneath the roof of my home while I was writing this book. And so I just feels like part of my subtitle of the book, Jeff, is Stories on Wrangling Hope, Embracing the Unexpected, and Discovering the Meaning of Family. And I'm like, oh, wow, I'm like writing this, but I am continually being invited to embrace the unexpected.
Dude, you're like, new lesson learned today.
Exactly. Yeah,
the book is 1,000 pages long just from the pandemic.
Right.
I'm certain that was woven in, right?
you know, yeah, some of it like was it
would
for
give
sure.
it more beef a little bit.
Yeah.
It'd be the pandemic is so fresh in everybody's mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And honestly, with a traditionally published book, I am thrilled that they gave me the opportunity to really like shed a spotlight on FASD. So I just am thrilled for the opportunity that it might create to increase visibility for families like ours and hopefully increase compassion and understanding for our loved ones with FASD.
So let's get into a little bit about the, you know, about the origin story a little bit. So you're the little guy on the spectrum. Were you a foster parent before? Like, how'd you get into fostering? Like, it's usually people fall into it. It's not something that they set out to do. How'd you become a foster parent?
Yeah, great question. In like 2000, coming back from a Guatemalan orphanage, I literally turned to my partner, Luke, on the plane coming back to the States and just said, naively, where are the vulnerable children here? Like, I didn't grow up, to my knowledge, with anyone that had engaged in foster parenting. So it was a relatively new concept. I kind of only knew foster care in very hazy terms. So at the ripe old age of 25, with exactly zero parenting experience, similar to you, Jeff, we were like, sign us up. And they were like, you'd be great. And, you know, I look back on that and I think, No,
I won't be great. Yeah.
I think we learned within probably the first 24 hours that there is a major difference between like taking notes in a clean, crisp journal and like living out what is before you underneath the roof of your home. So that was kind of our crash course into fostering. In A Love Stretch Life, I talk about just the crazy journey of actually reconnecting with our very first foster child who walked in our door that we had the privilege of parenting for that first year. And he's now 25. And that's a crazy story all into itself. But so we moved from New York to Portland, Oregon. I had two small biological daughters at the time. I made Jeff what I thought was an like introductory phone call to the Oregon Department of Human Services Child Welfare saying, hey, I'm not sure like when we'll be ready, but we are still certified. We're interested in potentially, you know, being a resource sometime in the future. And then they called me a week later. That child is now my 13-year-old son. I have a 12 and a half year relationship with his first mom. That's a whole story. It's written about in A Love Stretch Life. But with Charlie, our youngest, we thought our family was complete with three kids. And we got a call from the Oregon Child Abuse Hotline saying, could you pick up a baby from the hospital just for the weekend? Famous last words, just for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I barely talked to my partner, Luke. He was actually at our neighbor's house playing NBA Jam. So, you know, like in a really good like mindset to be making like a lifelong choice here.
A great game though, by the way. And so it's so interesting too, that's, you remember like that's the game, right? That's a burnt memory.
It is a burnt memory because, you know, I write about this in A Love Stretch Life. It's like, had the question been, are you ready, Jelana, to say yes to a child who will be significantly impacted from in utero alcohol exposure? Are you ready to you know, collect diagnoses and to do the therapies and to have all the professionals? Are you ready to all the things that it's, you know, are you ready to have meltdowns in public places? Are you ready to completely change the way you parent? Are you ready to X, Y, and Z? I would have said like, I am not, this isn't even something we're looking for. But the question I was asked, Jeff, is, can you pick up a baby for 48 hours from the hospital? And honestly, I count that as grace that I didn't know all those things, because again, yeah, like I said before, I would have probably said no. And I fiercely love my son. It is a privilege to raise Charlie. But that's, I mean, that's the origin story. And we adopted him at age 2. He's been with us since he was 48 hours old. So we have all, you know, all the talk, I'm sure you hear it a lot, about kind of that nurture, that myth of like the right amount of like love and discipline, structure, nurture, maybe a little faith sprinkled in there. Like all of that is going to equal clean slate. And, you know, I kind of refer to myself as a very gentle bubble burster as I engage with families that think picking up a baby from the hospital is going to mean that they're going to bypass the effects of in utero substance exposure.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%. So obviously he stayed for longer than the weekend.
He's 10. He's never left. He's 10 years old.
Okay. So what was your previous knowledge of FASD?
Zero.
Yeah.
Okay, zero, Jeff. Yeah, Zero. So I look back and, you know, I know you've talked about this before. Child welfare agencies have a long way to go in terms of like what, how they present alcohol exposure to parents. Oftentimes it's like lumped in with like drugs and alcohol and for all of like 7 minutes, you know. You know, looking back, my son was born to a woman who was pretty overtly mentally ill and homeless. And not once, and I'm not blaming the caseworker on this. I look back and I think, oh, I was naive too. Not once did anyone ever say, hey, Jelana, I know that this baby appears so healthy. I know that you are head over heels in love with him. I know that he seems like typically developing, but I need you to consider the possibility that the story that's playing out when he's two may not be the story that continues to unfold. And I wish somebody had sat me down and at least talked to me about that. I think for a million different reasons, people don't want to rock the boat or they're just moving too fast or the tyranny, the urgent. But I feel like this most critical conversation is skipped. So Jeff, it wasn't until Charlie was two that he started suddenly dropping away from some developmental milestones, late to walk, late to talk, late to crawl, late to get his teeth, never slept. And, you know, my husband and I kind of were like, well, you know, we don't know, we're attachment oriented. So like, oh, you know, looking through the lens of attachment, we're like, well, we're just going to keep wearing him in our baby carrier and having his, you know, crib right next to our bed so we can respond to every little need. But he didn't sleep for a very long time. In fact, it was 5 years that we did not sleep more than like 3 hours at a time. It was a newborn schedule. And so I held up a detective spyglass and, you know, having raised some other neurotypical kids, even kids that come from trauma around 2.5, well after his adoption had finalized, I was like, there's something here. And even the professionals were like, Jelana, it's okay. There's a wide range of normal. And that's true. There is a wide range of normal. And yet there is a parental gut that sometimes you just have to go with. And so it wasn't until I read Diane Maubin's book, Trying Differently Rather Than Harder, that all the other diagnoses my son had stacked up clicked into place. And it's like, okay, these are puzzle pieces. Yes, this is true. But I don't know the landscape of what puzzle I'm clicking together right here. And reading about FASD, it was like, there's no question. And so essentially, I went back to his team of professionals and just kindly yet directly said, prove to me he doesn't have this. Here are all the things that stack up. And then that's how we got his diagnosis.
When you read and all of the check marks are going off, was it validation or was it like a gut sink? Like, oh dear goodness. Like, because, you know, love Diane Maubin. Love, she taught me a lot personally even, but you know, statistics aren't, they're not something to revel in. I mean, we'll say that, especially not back then. As we know, things are changing and we don't call the podcast FASD Success for nothing. But what was your reaction? Like, Eureka, this is it, or holy shit?
It was actually the first, very quickly followed by the second. It was like, oh my gosh, all these late nights, like scouring, you know, medical journals and checking out books at the library. It just felt like, yes, this is it. It has a name. Oh my gosh, it has a name. And then pretty quickly after that was kind of the spiral of grief of like, oh, wow. Like the parenting journey that we thought we were on is now a very different parenting journey that's going to require accommodations from us that we had no idea at that time how to engage.
And then was it like this? Okay. So first you had to fight for the diagnosis because you found out that the services weren't aware of it either because they just haven't been trained yet. They just didn't know about it. And then you think that once you get the diagnosis that some doors are going to open up and then you quickly realize that wasn't the case, or are you an anomaly and that wasn't the case and you had access to things?
You know, I'm very familiar, Jeff, walking alongside both personally and professionally, a lot of foster and adoptive families, that there are many services, many systems that offer, quote, services in name only, where it sounds like maybe fancy on a piece of paper, but when you break it down, it's like, this is nothing. This doesn't help me at all. I was really fortunate to take a class from an amazing organization in Oregon called FACT, and they're kind of the liaison between the community and the developmental disability state system. So I took some classes from them on how to navigate getting a personal support worker. And so about 6 months after starting that process, they came out, they met with Charlie, you know, they penciled in a Scantron of like 100 different sheets, it seems, and then they spit out a certain number of service hours that Charlie qualifies for. He does need line of sight supervision. And I have been really, fortunate in the midst of the hard. I mean, life is still hard.
Yeah.
But in the midst of that, I've been really fortunate that we have had the same aid for 3 years for our son, which I know is...
Stability is the number one success factor. Stability at home, stability with services. It's interesting. Is it? It's cool if I read something from the book?
Please.
I like how you said this. The bright and true essence of Charlie is someone unique, curious, loving, smart, funny, and creative. Due to FASD, he also experiences anger, explosions, aggression, impulsivity, and perseveration that threaten to cloud the joy of who he is.
Yes.
Did you find, because I bet you he looks normal, talks normal, and when he meets people, can make friends really fast, that there was a contrast to who people saw him as and to your accounts of him? And was there any either finger pointing of your parenting, just didn't believe you? What were some of the things that you had to deal with? Because you sound like a very articulate advocate, but it's different when it's your boy. And there's so much emotion tied around that. What was your experience like?
You know, I talk in the book about how Charlie has invited me to kind of erase stuff, like every internal monologue I've ever had previous to parenting him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
About, you know, in a public place, seeing a child melt down or seeing somebody like swear like a sailor. And internally, my mind kind of went to, oh, sweet baby. Like, imagine how he's talked to at home to be repeating such things like that, you know. And that child, Jeff, is now my child. And we have been pouring like love and goodness and structure into him from 48 hours old, you know, and we are struggling big time. I mean, honestly, you can pick any venue and we have had a major meltdown there. Doctor's offices, church out in the community. He is just, you know, he's doing well until suddenly he's not. And I know other parents with FASD know exactly what I mean by that. And so, you know, he perseverates. Anytime he's told no, we are all walking on eggshells. Our whole family is hypervigilant. And, you know, he gets overstimulated very easily and has a ton of anxiety. So that's just a ball of unpredictability.
So how was that then when you were sitting and he asked you, he says, when does it go away?
Oh,
like I went like when I was reading that.
Yeah. Yeah. We were reading books on my bed. And honestly, there's so many things are really challenging for Charlie that I feel like I just extra like soak in just being able to the fact that all with all of his struggles that he can like sit on the couch or on the bed and like snuggle up and read for 20 minutes.
I receive wins,
you're just, a gift, like gift in capital blinking letters. But he did turn to me one night and said, Mama, when does it go away? And I was like, what? He's like, the alcohol in my brain. I'm just wondering when it goes away. And that, you know, we talked with Charlie very directly about his like diagnosis. Sure. So I was pleased that he could just ask that question. And I just felt that gulp in my throat of like, you know, and I tried to take a deep breath and say like, Charlie, you are so smart and you're going to keep learning and we're going to be there with you, you know, every step of the way to help. And sweetie, it's always, you're always going to be affected with fetal alcohol. It's not going to go away. And yet you're growing, you're changing, you're evolving. So I tried to just put a positive spin, but as you know, I have about 7 seconds before my son's kind of like, okay, back to the story, you know?
It's like I tell people it's like flowers for Algernon, but for 7 to 10 seconds at a time, right? You're like, who are you? Right? And then it's gone. It's extremely tough. Like what you said, the whole family's hypervigilant. Mm-hmm. And I talk about when we train parents and that not only are you going through grief and loss, young man, you know, Charlie goes mm-hmm. through it, mm-hmm. but the kids are, you know, the other kids are going through it as well. What was the sibling dynamic like?
You know, I think I'm really grateful that Charlie is our youngest. I feel like it has made the transition to parenting totally differently to accommodate his disability easier, knowing that there aren't younger siblings kind of watching the difference. I think as probably any parent can relate to, the attention pie in our household, Jeff, is not sliced evenly. And if my husband and I are not careful, Charlie can easily take up the whole pie. And so it has been hard for us to just realize that sometimes there are times we have to engage as a family without Charlie, which just as a mama just totally breaks my heart. And the reality is he doesn't care. He wants to be home with his aide doing his video games or doing what he wants to do.
Agreed. It's hard to get over that. Like when you're like, but they don't want to, they don't want to go. It's
they don't want to go, but I want to, I have this notion of family. And I write about in a Love Stretch Life that like, if you'd asked me like, Jelana, what do you think your, you know, family is going to look like? I would have been so easy breezy about it, Jeff. I would have been like, oh, I don't know. I'm so open. I'm da 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 da. And it's not until you are standing in a moment where you're like, I thought I didn't have any preconceived notions about what my family life would look like, but now I'm standing here and this is nothing that I envisioned, even if I didn't admit it to myself. And so, you know, that's a journey that our whole family has gone on. I have to say, I'm very proud of my three teenage kids who all very much rally around Charlie. I feel like in the midst of some very real challenges of having a sibling severely impacted with FASD, they have an awareness, Jeff, that what you see on the surface doesn't tell the whole story. And honestly, I did not have that awareness until I was probably in my mid-20s and started foster parenting. They get it now.
Yeah,
they understand now.
Them. Are any of them in the human services field or going into it? I'm wondering, what are your kids doing?
You know, well, my kids are in high school now, but yeah, my oldest that's going to be going off to college next year is interested in potentially counseling and walking alongside other siblings.
You don't know how many times, this is anecdotal, but that's usually the case. It drives up empathy and understanding, and they're seeing, you know, the raw deal that individuals on the spectrum get. So that's why I just was asking that question. What do you do when you feel like, or maybe you do, lose your crap, you know, and it becomes overwhelming? Like, what do you do personally to self-regulate? How do you manage? Because you're right, in the midst of a pandemic or even now, like, how do you keep your nervous system in a state? How do you do it? What do you do? What's your method?
My method. Well, I feel like I used to kind of believe that doing some of the things that I'm about to tell you were like fluffy extras. And I've now come to really embrace that it's like treading water all the time. And without these things, I will drown. I engage with a counselor regularly. I do acupuncture when I can.
Yep.
I take advantage of my health insurance's plan for massage every once in a while. Yes. I mean, these are things that I just didn't do before, but like, seriously, the nervous system is shot. At times I have needed to go on an antidepressant, and that's really hard because I feel like it's kind of situationally induced. Like I'm just trying to do my best to stay afloat. And that is not the answer for everyone. And that's something that I share really vulnerably. I'm not saying that's the way, but for me, that has been a part of a tool in my toolbox in certain seasons to engage. I have standing walks with a friend. I take a bath. I read at night. I don't watch a lot of TV. I try to stay the heck away from social media in a lot of ways because it really brings me down. It can put me in a spiral. And we all know that like you can't juxtapose our very real deal life against somebody else's highlight reel. We know that. And yet mentally, I think for many parents that struggle, that have, you know, holes punched in their walls or splintered doors or different things, it's like, how does one engage genuinely and authentically in a little tiny square about like what's going on in life? And so I just am mindful of that. I still, you know, engage in it, but I try to be really mindful by setting limits on my phone so that I can't just get caught up in the scroll. So I try to be pretty intentional with that.
Yeah. It's funny. What you don't see is the Xanax they smashed before they took all those pretty pictures, right? Like I've been doing this for a long time. And a lot of those families you see with the nice pictures, it is not. It's not that way, but it looks that way, especially when are you on your phone when you're feeling vulnerable, right?
And exactly.
It's easy to put your subconscious in that. So, okay. So let's talk about the book. We're just going to go right into my favorite segment. It's the shameless self-promotion because we want people to read this. Why a collection of stories? Why different than your overall arcing story? It seems like there's a lesson in all the stories. What's the thought process behind that?
You know, I started out exploring just how I've been changed. I'm not the same person that I would have been, Jeff, if I weren't raising a neurodivergent child. I'm not the same person I would have been if I didn't have an almost 13-year relationship of folding one of my son's first moms into our family.
Yep.
And I'm not the same person I would have been if I hadn't seen our very first foster child bounce in a very overwhelmed, dysfunctional system and then come out on the other side after being involved with juvenile justice and incarceration and homelessness. Like, I have been changed through walking alongside. These are people who I dearly, dearly love, and they have shaped me. I think this book resonates with parents, especially foster and adoptive parents, especially those engaging FASD, because I was privileged to write a few chapters specifically about that. But I hope, Jeff, that this book would be an encouragement to somebody who feels like there's a gap between how they thought things would go and the lived reality, and that there would be some nuggets of hope and encouragement.
It's the grief gap. Write that down, dude. That's what you're doing, is you're plugging the grief gap, because, you know, we have to give up what we thought it was going to be like to take on what it really is. And that's a very important gap to fill, because grief with an individual with FASD is much different. And again, I'm not being insensitive. Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, you know, the book on death and dying, and she gave the five things that people go through, their stages, and at the ending is acceptance. But what's different for when you're raising an individual is that, you know, the person hasn't passed away, and you're constantly seeing, as your youngster develops, that gap grow, and the other peers, you know, as they start to develop and they start to do these things, and we want independence for our kid, and we start to come to the realize that's, you know, total independence might not be because of their executive functioning deficits.
Yes, right.
You go around and you talk to whatever friends you have left. I don't know if that was your experience. You talk to the friends, and what's the first thing they do is say, how are you and how are your kids? Right. You know, and you're hearing about their kids. Like, I guess if Charlie's 10, they made this team, they're doing well in school, they're going to summer camp. And you're like, well, Charlie's going to get a med review. And, you know, he only put one hole in the wall. Like, so it's totally different. I think that is a perfect space to be in, whether you really know it. There's so much grief and loss, and people don't understand it. But then it also gives hope. Mm-hmm. What it sounds like to me also is that you reframed your definition of success. Mm-hmm. How did you get there? Like, was there a moment, or was it just gradually over time where you went and said, you know what, him reading books on the couch with me with, you know, no raging or swearing, like, is beautiful. Mm-hmm. How did you get there without, I don't want you to give stuff away, but was it a moment or a gradual progression here?
Oh, it's gradual. I feel like it's the grief and the celebration. It's still, you know, rarely, Jeff, do we have a day that's comprised of any one thing. It's usually an ebb and flow, like we're bobbing along the water of, like, we're regulated, we're very dysregulated, we're regulated, we're very dysregulated. So I think in the midst of the consistent inconsistency, I would say it has taught me, it is continually teaching me to appreciate things that before I mistook as a low level expectation, and dare I say, celebrate those things, you know, like, hey, your child didn't swear today. Amazing. High five. You know, like, things that with my other kids would have been like, oh, that's not anything to call out and really celebrate. So I feel like that appreciation of the everyday. And also, Jeff, I think listening to some of your former guests, like, I was listening to the episode with Judy Pakosti.
Pakosti. Judy P, man, she's a beaut. I've known her for a long time.
Oh, she's a powerhouse, and I want to be her friend. But I think, you know, she said something in her episode about how her child is doing things now that she couldn't envision 10
Matthew,
years ago.
Yeah,
I feel like in parenting in general, it's hard. No sugarcoating that, but especially when FASD comes into the mix, I think there's a good deal of borrowing hope. You know, I feel like hearing stories. And so it allows me to even look back. And sometimes I think in the exhaustion of caregiving a child with FASD, it can be tough to really be introspective because there's always something new to be engaging. However, I look back and I think my son is 10 now. 5 years ago, he was taking things that didn't belong to him probably 25 times a day in many different settings. He's not doing that anymore. We couldn't leave any sharp objects out because he would cut off his sister's hair sitting on the couch watching TV. He's not doing that anymore. If the door was cracked open, he used to run away. And I had the scariest experience of actually opening up my door and seeing a woman say, "Gotta move, honey, gotta move." And there's my son sitting cross-legged in the middle of the street with a car that could have hit him. I mean, so I look back and I think those were all a part of my story 5 years ago. And now he's 10 and there are other very challenging things that we are navigating now. But those challenges from 5 years ago have faded. We're now engaging new challenges, but I can celebrate that some of the hard does fade, some of the hard does dissipate, and some of it is because it really does change, and some of it is because our mindset as caregivers change.
Absolutely. When your mindset changes, you change the way you interact, you change the way you see the individual, empathy goes up, right? You could still be mad because it's just frustrating and you're exhausting. Like I like what you wrote here. I'm not sharing this for you to pity me. I'm not sharing it because I have regrets about saying yes to my Just for the Weekend baby. I would say yes to him again with his approval. I'm sharing this because I want others to see my son and recognize the obstacles he has to scale. You are not looking for, you know, pity. You are looking for empathy.
Exactly.
And understanding, right?
Exactly. I mean, I look at my other kids and I look around our neighborhood and it's, you know, obviously we want to celebrate every child's unique strengths and help them with their unique struggles. But for most kids, it's like walking down a smooth sidewalk. And for Charlie, I just see him having to like clip on his boots every day and like scale a mountain to do the things that, you know, normally for others would be like walking down the sidewalk. And so I'm trying to recognize those invisible mountains and celebrate when he's able to scale them and help pull him and keep him safe when he's not.
Besides recognizing, because I don't want to give it all away, but I think it's fun and it backs off with my episode with Judy. Is one of the things changed, you know, pardon my French, your give a shit meter?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I can see it in your face.
100%, Jeff. Yeah, I feel like if I didn't have that meter in my life, my head might explode. I mean, honestly, we have to. It's not even, I feel like it's not even a, like, should we do this or should we not? It's like, no, you have to. You have to let go of so much. And it's a process. But the things that would have had me, you know, staring at a wall before parenting Charlie are now like, day in the life. Like, life goes on. Let's keep on going.
What, you don't have to tell the story, but like foreshadow, what's your favorite story in the book? Because don't say, oh, they're all awesome. Like, what just one you're like, yeah, that's my jam. I like it.
One of the first stories that come to mind goes actually back to what we were talking about, doing family time without a family member. I share in the book about going to the movies with Charlie, and Charlie, you know, he perseverates. And at that time, everything was crammed into his Dora the Explorer backpack. He had like Christmas bulbs jammed into the cargo shorts of his pockets, and he had a bungee cord tied around his waist. And so if you can envision getting out of the minivan with a bungee cord with a Dora the Explorer, you know, 6 feet behind. It was like, I was like the oversized truck like overload. And halfway through the movie that we had to convince him and cajole him to get to, he just announced, "I'm done." And then got off the steps and his little suitcase went thump, 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 you know. And I just walked around the lobby of the movie theater. Charlie was completely unaware of people staring. And I just thought, next time we go to the movies, this isn't fair to Charlie. He isn't enjoying this. And so the next time we went to the movies as a family, we saw the movie Wonder. Have you seen that movie, Jeff?
Yeah,
it's
like,
about the little boy with the severe facial deformity.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Right now, the only thing that's on repeat is Encanto in my house. But yes, Wonder. Yes. And yeah, that's the boy did well. And the dad who was the dad in that was excellent too.
Yeah. It was an amazing movie. But we sat there in the theater with like the light shining, you know, the movie light shining off, eating our popcorn. And there is a line in that movie where the older sister, who has not had the attention nor the physical struggles of her younger brother, was watching her mom paint. And she was painting the space scene. And she said, "My little brother is the sun and we all orbit around him." And that line, Jeff, it just still makes me want to like break me open, because it just felt like, this just describes in one sentence what our family is like. And like, here we are, and just tears of gratefulness that I could be spending this time with my other kids, tears of, you know, it's just that rumble. It's that constant rumble with joy and grief, joy and grief. And so that's one of the stories I share amongst many others, but it just stands out to me because I just feel like it represents the dailiness. You know, there's nothing incredibly special about that story, but it's a sneak peek into what I think a lot of your listeners can relate to, which is our life, every moment of our life looks different.
It sure does. Last question. What do you say to that mama who's been fostering, who opened up her house and her life to give love and then was placed with it and it's not like that? Like, and maybe even you 10 years ago, what would you say to that person who's listening right now, either in their car or jogging? Some people listen to us in the shower. It's weird, right? Make sure to get all your bits. What would you say?
I would say do your homework on secondary trauma. Like, we are very skilled in like fight, flight, freeze. We know about primary trauma, but as caregivers, really dig in and know the signs of secondary trauma. Again, obviously recognize that. I think especially in foster care, Jeff, there's foster child welfare is really formed on like attachment theory. The notion of just give it time. If a child has enough love, structure, nurture for the right amount of time, then eventually attachment will come. But you and I both know that like if we were looking at our children through that lens, we would be banging our own heads against the wall because it would be like, why? We've given it time. This child has been with us since the very beginning, or X, Y, and Z. So I would say go with your gut. If you expect that there's a little bit more going on than meets the eye, advocate for your kids. Don't fall into the prevalent child welfare notion of just give it time and attachment theory. That is true. And it's also true that in utero alcohol exposure is a game changer and deserves to be, you know, a deep dive and to be learned about. I also would just say Charlie's processing delay. I know we need to give him 30 seconds to respond, but oh my gosh, Jeff, when I really put a stopwatch on for 30 seconds, I realize I'm usually giving my son about 6 seconds and that feels like it's an eternity to me.
If that, and you have to get in, you have to be comfortable with the awkward silence, and it's not awkward. It's processing silence. And because we feel that we need to always, you know, no dead air. Right. And then we get nervous about it, but no, you give them something and then you just wait for it to come back. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I would just say a lot of little like practical things like that, you know, like we.
Yeah. And you know your kid, right? Like I say that to parents, you know your kid more than anybody else. If they were going to do a biography on your child, they would call you first because you are the expert. You know what the way they're breathing, how their mood changes. You just know, I'm telling you, you can smell them and like, you know, and not being weird, but you just. That's how in tuned you are with your kids. So don't let anybody tell you, right, that you're either doing it wrong or you're not trying hard enough. You absolutely get it. And I think when I first started, there weren't many books like that. And so are you prepared also for the other side? Because this is foster and adoption. In my community, it's going to be received like gangbusters. But I don't know if you've ever put an article out there for the general public for the comments too. Are you prepared for both of those ways?
I mean, I hope so. I like this. This is kind of stepping into new territory for me. I was very, very mindful with the way this was presented.
Oh, it's great. You did a great
job. Yeah. I think one of the last things I would share is, you know, I think sometimes we think of advocacy as, you know, going into IEP meetings and all the things that really are, you know, advocacy. But I think advocacy can also look in like really tiny ways. And so when you were talking about how we know our children so well, I took Charlie to the dentist. He had to get a cavity filled. And, you know, it took a lot for him to just sit in the chair and all the hygienists were like, just jabbering at him. And I had to say, can you please just direct your comments to me just because we needed that dead air time. And they weren't serious. They were just trying to make conversation. And I could just see him tensing up. And then I looked at the TV that was going on in the room and I could hear the 80s music that was like going on in the hallway. And it was just like, I began to feel overwhelmed on his behalf. And so I just was able to say, can we please turn off the TV and can you please close the door because there's too much noise going on. And they were like, sure, great. But I think sometimes as parents, we feel like we can't step into our power in just like little ways. We don't want to inconvenience people. We don't want to like be seen as being high maintenance, all those things. But I think that's one area that I'm continuing to grow, but I'm certainly leaning in of like, there are serious consequences if we don't set this environment up to for success as much as possible.
It's true. And the dentist office is trying to do their best because usually the silence, people don't like that, right? So they want something to distract from the sound of the drills, and it's a polar opposite for our kids.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
This is so good. And I know, again, we're staying in the shameless self-promotion corner. You're easy to listen to, but you also speak. That's right, right?
I do some speaking, yes, right. Professionally.
So let's plug that too, dude, because people are going to read this and then they're going to hear this and they might want you to speak to their organization. So tell us a little bit about what you speak about.
You know, I professionally helped to found an organization here in Oregon that partners with our child welfare system called Every Child. And so I speak about community government partnership. I speak about foster care and adoption. I speak about parenting a child with disability. And, you know, up to this point, have been privileged to speak at some conferences for foster and adoptive parents. But people can check me out at jelanagoble.com. There is a page there to connect with me. And honestly, my biggest hope for this book is that people read it and feel more seen and less alone. And I love engaging with folks. And so I honestly feel like, reach out to me. Like, what did you think of Love Stretch Life? I'd love to hear how, if this resonates with you, if you feel a connection to parts of your story, because that's honestly the heartbeat with which I'm offering this book into the world, is to say,
I'll tell you what I get. You want to hear what I get? This is literally, okay. So this is at 1:20, like this afternoon. Hey, Jeff, I've been reading everything I could. I recently purchased your book, Making Sense of the Madness. And I think it's great. Sharing with all my family members. The only other book I'm reading regarding FASD was Diane Melvin's book. And it was just a little bit too academic for my mother-in-law, who is primarily her helper. I'd hate to be a pain, but I noticed on page 35 of your book, it says in some ways they're still helping to realize their dream, but it should be there and not there. Thank you so much. I hope you can change it. I get about two of those a year for a grammar error. It's like, we liked your book, backhanded column it, learned for grammar, son. There you go.
You know, it's so interesting, Jeff. It's like, here we are, and the whole key to our survival as parents, let alone thriving, is not sweating the small stuff. So for somebody to really zero in on something, it's just an interesting observation.
That's your, when you're given F meter, doesn't go hard. So how do folks get this book, man? Where do they go? I know you mentioned your website, but where do they go? How do they get a hold of you?
It's where my website's jelanagoble.com, and A Love Stretch Life is available pretty much wherever books are sold. Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, Target.
My gosh. Are you going to go to your local store and take a picture of it on the shelf?
I really should.
Absolutely. Like, I went the self-publishing route so I can get it out there. But if I was in a store, absolutely, I would do that, you know? And I'd even do like the pretend I was reading it. If people were here, I'd be like, hey, you see me here? Do you see this? It's a big accomplishment. Since we're talking, here's my last question. And it's different for everybody. A lot of mamas say, I could write a book about this. Can we talk about that? How did you get into writing? And what's like a little tip that maybe somebody can do? I would love to do this, but you seem to have done it. Your mindset was, I'm going to finish this book, even if, right? So What can some of the mamas do to even start thinking about that could maybe be a reality?
Well, I think first and foremost, I started this process, this writing process in 2018, when I just felt like I needed to take some time away, step away from work for a month and just process. I felt like there's a constant onslaught of like things that we were engaging as a family. And I felt like the soundbite honestly was becoming like, well, it's just really hard. It's really hard. And I just felt like, no, it's really hard and it's good, all intertwined together every single, you know, minute. And so for me, I started this not knowing it was going to be A Love Stretch Life, not having the end game be a traditionally published book. I started this saying, I am writing for me as a way to process what I have gone through. I was in a dinner club with some other women who we were, you know, talking, and one of the gals there had a connection to a literary agent in Nashville. And she said, can I see your, you know, what you're working on? And I was like, well, sure. That is how I got a literary agent. That is how I got. So it wasn't something that I was seeking out.
Right.
And so that to me just means this is meant to be, this message is meant to be in the world, because I really was not like clawing my way to the top.
But you still, you had still on your own put pen to paper. So you're saying you started and at least put it out there in the universe.
I did. And honestly, I had to write myself into my calendar because I waited for a margin of time to just suddenly drop down from the heavens into my lap and say, Jelana, you have nothing else to do for the next 5 hours. Why don't you write? It would never happen. And so I didn't watch TV for 2 years, late nights, early mornings, a few weekends away. And that's how I did it. But now that it's here, I'm really pleased for it to be out and to see how it resonates with folks.
Yeah, man. Not the full thing, full disclosure, but it did read a lot because it's important. I wanted to be ready to talk to you, but I like it. I like it because I like people who are real, and you did a really good job of what you said, talking about the good and the bad. And it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but when it's like a rainbow, when it does finish raining and it's beautiful, it is really beautiful. And I have no doubt that while there will be turbulence, your boy's just is going to do just fine having you around. And I'm so glad you were on me and kept reminding me about this. Obviously you can tell, you know, I'm a little scatterbrained, but it was absolutely awesome to talk to you. And now that you haven't watched TV for 2 weeks, what are you watching now? I mean, 2 years, what are you watching now?
I caught up on Schitt's Creek.
Buddy, that's a Canadian gem.
I know. I feel like I shouldn't even ask that question. Yeah. That's a stupid question to ask you. But oh my gosh, I love that show so much. And I feel like, you know, I feel like so often, Jeff, and I don't know, like I feel like I can easily gobble up time, like reading like heavy things, like nonfiction and all about FASD, because there's a part of me that's hungry to always like know what's. And I have to be disciplined to like also say, you know what, there's just as much value sometimes in just watching something that doesn't have to be educational every moment. I've had to remind myself, like, it's okay to have fun too, as a parent, and to just like be playful and be silly and not have to be so darn productive with every single second of my time. But I think every parent knows, especially with FASD, that in the unpredictability of life, like you really have to like lean into the times where things are relatively regulated and you can get stuff done. So
Well said. The book is called A Love Stretched Life, Stories of a Wrangling Hope, Embracing the Unexpected and Discovering the Meaning of Family. You heard it here, folks. She lives it and she's written about it and she wants to give you hope to get through it. Go get it. All the stores. It's going to be great. You're going to be great. Much success. I hope it really does well. And then you'll have to come back when, you know, you talk about the teenage years, when your boy gets hormones, and then we'll have a different story. That 100%.
Sounds good. And in the meantime, I'm borrowing the hope of others, kind of a little bit like smiling and a little bit cringy face as I listen to what's coming for me in the next few years.
So will you come back and do this again?
I would love it, Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It was nice having you. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome possum, Jelana, right? Told you, she's great to talk to. Fantastic, new friend, love it. I want to go over a few things she said, she talked about, and then we'll get out of here, okay? So the overall theme of the book, she talked about, like, this is a no sugarcoating for prospective foster parents. Nuggets, I wish I would have known. As a former foster parent myself, it is true. You do not know a lot when you're going into it. And she made it not like this one story arc. It's a collection of stories, which I like. So you could rock a story before bed. She talks about embracing the unexpected. It's really the story behind the story. And she sort of expressed the same sentiment about fostering. She didn't grow up knowing about fostering. And she said, I'd consider it an act of grace I didn't know, because I would have counted myself out and said, I don't have what it takes. And she was talking about they learned within the first 24 hours that there's a major difference between taking notes in a clean, crisp journal and the living out what is before you under the roof of your home. Amen to that, sister. She talked about how Charlie came to be with her family. She talked about how the children are presented in the foster system. Had the question been, are you ready, Jelana, to say yes to a child who would be significantly impacted from prenatal alcohol exposure in utero? Are you ready to collect diagnoses and do therapies and have all the professionals? Are you ready for meltdowns in public places? Are you ready to completely change the way you parent? I would have said no, but the question I was asked, can you pick up a baby from the hospital for 48 hours?
the royal we, the system loses a lot of good parents by not letting them know ahead of time. And I know they're changing that in Minnesota by making it mandatory. She spoke about how they adopted him 2 years old and expectations versus reality. That's a big one. You know, and my mentor would always say we have to give up what we thought it was going to be like to take on what it really is, but that is a big challenge. She spoke about how people adopting think love, discipline, structure, nurture, and a little bit of faith is all they need. She calls herself a gentle bubble burster for people who think love and nurture will bypass the effects of prenatal alcohol exposure. True. How many times have you maybe thought that yourself before you started, however you acquired your loved one on the spectrum, that people think they just need to be loved hard, disciplined hard, and that everything will fall into place? No way, Jose. Not once did anyone say to her, I need you to consider the possibility that the story that is being played out when he is two may not be the story that continues to unfold. I wish someone would have sat me down and at least talked to me about that. Well, we're doing it right now, because if you're a prospective foster parent, she's absolutely saying like it changed her life, and would she do it again? Absolutely. And she did talk about the grief and loss and the importance of structure and accommodations required for her guy. And she said she's been really fortunate in the midst of hard. She says it's still hard, and we've had our same aid for 3 years. They talked about the contrast of who Charlie appears to be and how he does well until he doesn't. And then we talked about the symptoms, talked about him asking, when does it go away? Remember I read that piece from the book, When Does It Go Away? And how she responded and talked to him about the diagnosis. She talked about the effect on siblings. She said she benefited because she's proud of her 3 teenage kids. They really rallied around Charlie, but that's not always the case at all. And then, of course, I asked her, how does she regulate? Because that's what's key here. You got to check yourself, right, before you wreck yourself. She can counseling. She does acupuncture. She uses her benefits to massage, medication when needed, walk with friends, reading. She stays away from social media. And I think that's a really good thing. And here's the point, man. I am not the same person I would have been had I not raised neurodivergent child. And I think that is 100%. I would not be doing this had I not been a foster parent or been involved with the FASD community and, frankly, even in my own place. But we are here. We are doing it. And we know better now. And since we know better, we could do better. And we could change the outcomes of these children. You can change the outcomes of these children. And so by all means, when her book comes out soon, actually, so grab it because I think it's awesome. It's at all the bookstores. It's called The Love Stretched Life, Stories Unwrangling Hope, Embracing the Unexpected, and Discovering the Meaning of Family. And that's what I want you to do, man. I want you to embrace the unexpected. You are a warrior. If you're listening to me now, an hour into this bad boy, and you are still listening, you're fucking awesome, okay? Sometimes I swear, I don't give a shit. I just want to let you know in your ear. You're a fucking badass. Keep going. Keep grinding. Do not stop. Keep learning. Keep loving. And keep giving yourself so much grace because this is hard. This is hard. And sometimes you're going to cry because it's hard. Sometimes it's going to push you to places you never thought you'd go. But you have a community. You have the understanding. You have the knowledge. And then you're going to implement things that you do to regulate yourself. And you're not going to be apologetic about it. You're just going to do it because you mean that much. You mean that much to your family. You mean that much to me. You mean that much to the FASD community as a whole. So keep kicking ass. You are a badass. I seriously love you. Thank you so much for being a part of this show. Have a kick-ass week, and I'll see you back here this time, same bad channel. Keep it up. You're freaking sweet. Until then, we'll talk later. Bye.